And now it's time for Madison's Mad Facts with your host, Madison Standish.
Hey everybody, it's Madison. This Madison's Mad Facts was first released as a Patreon Madison member exclusive in 2024 as a bonus feature for our adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life. Enjoy! Welcome to another Madison on the Air bonus feature of Madison's Mad Facts, where we look at the way things were in real life back during these old-timey radio shows. Our latest episode is from the Lux Radio Theater's adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life. We were excited to do this Christmas classic because of how popular it continues to be with audiences year after year. Truly, this film permeates American culture and prompted scores of bad Jimmy Stewart impersonations. Speaking of bad Jimmy Stewart impersonations, today we're talking with our George Bailey, Scott R. McKinley.
Well, no, that's not quite fair, Madison. I tried to be a little more subtle than that. I didn't try to do, you know, the older Jimmy Stewart. I tried to do the younger Jimmy Stewart. So it would sound just, you know, a little less exaggerated, as it were. You just want me to do Jack Benny? I'll do Jack Benny. Oh, Mary, you want the moon? I'll throw a lasso around it. How about that? Would you like that for a laugh? There you go.
I'm so kidding, Scott. You were seriously amazing in our episode, and totes did the heavy lifting for us on this one. Everyone always does a really annoying caricature of James Stewart. Like he was the first Shatner, you know? But you were awesome. And, like, you're a major history guy, right?
Yeah. For example, did you know Buffalo Gals was a popular minstrel song during the Civil War?
Didn't know. Didn't care.
Well, it was. And the Sex Pistols manager, Malcolm McLaren, released a scratch version of the song on MTV, back in the era where they still had 24/7 music videos.
Okay, you're a history guy and old. Got it. So, for this Madison's Mad Facts, you are going to talk about some fun history facts of It's a Wonderful Life, right?
Yes. Everything except the me being old part. The film was directed by Frank Capra, who immigrated to America back in 1897 with his family from Sicily. And it's
OMG, are you going to do like the movie and give me 30 pages of backstory before you get to the freaking point?
It speaks to why he chose to make this film. May I continue? So, this is the American dream. And I think it helps explain why Capra's films are thought of as sentimental. Not only are they a bit homesick for something in their tone, but they're also very pro-American, in a manner in which I think most immigrants feel after arriving and becoming citizens. You noted in the story that Potter refers to George's Italian friends as garlic eaters. Well, what you might not have known was that the censors wanted to take that line out, but Capra was the one who kept it in.
Owning his own slur!
In a way, he wanted the audience to get a sense of what it was like to be considered an outsider. Now, during World War II, Frank Capra enlisted with the U.S. Army Signal Corps and was part of a famous band of filmmakers who made movies referred to as the Why We Fight series, designed to be a direct reply to the Nazi propaganda films. There were 7 U.S. propaganda films produced by the U.S. Department of War between 1942 and 1945. There's some great history in the making of these films, but how it relates to It's a Wonderful Life is, Capra's time filming on the front lines of war changed him as a filmmaker. He'd captured grisly war footage, the likes of which wouldn't be seen until the 1998 Spielberg film, Saving Private Ryan.
So how does super graphic war horrors translate into a super sappy Christmas story?
Well, actually, the story had been around since before the war, and a lot of misinformation has grown up around it. The story itself was written by a New Jersey historian and editor named Philip Van Doren Stern. The idea had come to him while he was shaving one morning in 1938. He jotted it down and then didn't know exactly what to do with it. So he had it printed as a 20-page short story and sent it to 200 friends for Christmas as a Christmas card.
You know, that's like identical to how South Park was started. This exec at MTV saw this little animated short of Jesus versus Santa Claus and commissioned it to be sent as a Christmas card video to his friends and family. Of course, they were all from super Christian rural Illinois and were all, what the heck is this? So he pitched it to his sister network, Comedy Central, and the rest is television history.
That's actually, yes, very similar. Because one of the people on Stern's Christmas card list was Shirley Collier, a Hollywood agent. She sold it to RKO for him for $10,000 as a possible vehicle for Cary Grant. But true to Hollywood, the story would go through the rewrite mill with some very weird changes.
Weird? Such as?
Would you believe in one draft? George had an evil twin? It's true! In the original script, when George is shown how life would have been without him, he actually sees a different version of himself. This is the George Bailey who gets everything in life he thought he ever wanted. He's rich. He travels the world. But it's made him power-hungry and evil. This George even cheats on Mary. And then the good George falls in love with the evil George's Mary. And good George has an affair with her, causing a showdown between good George and evil George. After Uncle Billy commits suicide, and then good George kills evil George.
I've always felt It's a Wonderful Life needed more bloodshed. You said Cary Grant was supposed to play George. How did James Stewart get the part?
Following the war, Capra founded Liberty Films. And his first project was to be It's a Wonderful Life. While he had worked with Cary Grant in the comedy Arsenic and Old Lace, he'd done both Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and You Can't Take It With You with Stewart. But more notably, Capra, having served in the war, appreciated that Stewart had served as well.
He wasn't 4F on account of his ear?
Far from it. Stewart had volunteered as a pilot the first chance he got. Both of his grandfathers had fought for the North in the Civil War, and his father had served in the First World War. So Stewart was expected to serve his country as well. He trained as a pilot and then trained other pilots. And finally, he saw combat action as a squadron leader in the bombing campaign over Europe. He saw more combat action by far than any other Hollywood star who joined the war effort. He'd seen firsthand the bombing of civilian targets and other atrocities committed by accident or design. He was truly shaken and didn't think acting was a worthy goal any longer. It's a Wonderful Life would be his first film after his return from the war. He was dealing with a lot of painful memories and deep emotions at the time. And the story has it that Lionel Barrymore, who played Mr. Potter in the film, reassured Stewart during the filming that acting held more value than dropping bombs. And in some ways, It's a Wonderful Life was therapeutic for Stewart. In the scene in Martini's Bar, when he prays for help, he wasn't supposed to cry. But a flood of emotion swept over him in the moment, creating the moving scene. And here's a fun fact. The infamous line of, "Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings," comes from pilots in the military. When a pilot earns their wings badge or insignia on their uniform, they say, "An angel got his wings."
But overall, the film ended up not doing well at the box office.
No, it didn't. While it did receive an Oscar nod for Best Picture, there were a variety of factors that contributed to its lukewarm reception by audiences. One review that seemed to stick with Capra, and might have eventually led to his early retirement, was that this movie's themes and sentiments were too embedded in the pre-war, the Depression era, and that Capra wasn't keeping up with the post-war sensitivities, which was ironic since the war itself so deeply shaped It's a Wonderful Life in so many ways.
Well, thank you, Scott,
for... Wait. Can I share one last interesting fact?
Why not? Our audience probably would have turned us off already if they were bored by you.
Thank you. One part of the classic film that still sparks debate today is where exactly is the real Bedford Falls, New York? Some screen treatments indicated the setting was in Westchester County, New York, but Seneca Falls insists that they are the rightful town, holding an annual celebration of the film. Their claim is based on their bridge being the bridge that George jumps from to save Clarence. However, the original author, Philip Fandoren Stern, insists he was envisioning the setting as Califon, New Jersey.
But But in reality, the entire movie was shot on Hollywood sound stages and backlots. And the Seneca Falls folks are right about the bridge, except that a replica of the bridge was built on the RKO backlot, so not a single scene was actually filmed in New York. And, fun fact, the outdoor locations of Bedford Falls were filmed on the RKO Encino Ranch, which was located between what is now Burbank Boulevard and Balboa. This land would ultimately be turned into a residential area with a large park. The park still holds the original trees that lined downtown Bedford Falls, and you can visit them today. Famous trees! Woohoo! And BTW, Chrissy and Jeremy lived in Encino with Bedford Falls as their backyard for many years. Merry Christmas, Encino!
Well, Califon, New Jersey is 20 miles from where I live, and to research these mad facts, I just drove there last week. There aren't any main highways to take you there. It's a town of literally 1,500 people. It has a few streets with a beautiful park. No famous trees, like in the movie, but it boasts a playground, miles of country hiking. There's even a charming historical landmark bridge. The town is surrounded by horse farms, agricultural farms, orchards, and there's even a pet sanctuary. It's as close as you'll get to a Shangri-La in New Jersey. A fitting comparison since Frank Capra also directed a modern Paradise Lost film called Lost Horizon.
Wow, I think we've left the Mad Facts and turned into a tourist board. Should I have everyone call you when they want to visit New Jersey? Don't worry, you won't get any calls. Sorry, Jeremy is from New Jersey, and he's telling me that if I want him to do the audio engineering on this show, I better shut up now. Well, thank you so much, Scott R. McKinley, for not only playing George Bailey, but also for this awesome bit of info on Frank Capra and It's a Wonderful Life.
You're welcome, Madison. And have a wonderful holiday season. Thanks a lot, folks. And Merry Crimble, and have a very happy goo year. Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Gary Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too. And I'll hand you back over to Madison, who'll speak to you now.
You can check out other Madison Mad Facts on our feed. Or to get access to new bonus features, you can become a Patreon Madison member. Link in the show notes.